This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
So hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris. Today we are here with Kimberly Nelson and Derek Harms. They were awesome enough back in September to help us with cashing in on a boom. We renovated one chapter and added three brand new chapters to our portal, and adding square footage was the one they helped us with because they've been doing beautiful work in this space for, I guess, getting close to a decade. And we've decided that when we're not experts at something, we just want to bring somebody in who's actually doing the strategy in California so we get the latest and greatest. So thank you guys for joining us and helping us build this chapter.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, and absolutely. Derek, Kimberly was not able to be there live, so Derek took one for the team, and he actually ended up teaching the day, but Kimberly's all over it. But I want to start, one of the nice things is that I want to make, one of the things we get called about the most is how people get in the business, how they get started, how they get motivated. So hearing people's stories, and you guys are a little bit unique too, because a lot of people have to start by forming a partnership for one reason or another. Sometimes they don't have the experience or the money. So let's start with Kimberly, since we didn't get to see you in September. How did you even get started in this business?
Born and raised into this business, basically through osmosis. My dad and mom started a real estate investment business together when I think I was in the second grade, and she would drag me from job site to job site and she was renovating properties. And so I literally have been raised in the real estate business and decided that it was a fit. I loved the transformation process. I loved the real estate side of things, and just continued my dad's vision down here in San Diego.
Well, people may not know this, but in 2014, we ran around with a talk and specifically spoke about the strategy, and we used your projects out in San Diego, and I believe mostly in San Diego, as the pictures that we showed what was possible. You guys have such a beautiful design aesthetic, especially when you were doing a lot of interior work and tearing down walls. It was crazy. So if you didn't know that and you remember the pictures that we were showing back in 2014, it's your projects.
Oh, thank you very much, Aaron.
Aaron, I was at the SCCIA meeting, actually, when Bruce, and I believe you were there as well, when he started talking about strategy and showed some photos of some Sunoco projects and mentioned Jim. Obviously, I was connected with them at the time, so I think I texted him really at that, right while I was there today. We're talking about you here.
Oh, they didn't even tell you that we were going to use the pictures, huh?
So, well, that's wonderful. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Well, a shout out to your dad, Jim. He's been, I just miss that guy. Wonderful man. And he's been in the business a really long time, and probably a key reason that you even got in the business. So anyway.
Absolutely.
So you got to work with him quite a bit as well.
I did. I started in the office, you know, with mailers and doing runners, running errands. When I moved to San Diego, asked him for the opportunity to flip some properties down here. He was more than thrilled to open San Diego up to me and gave me all the tools I needed to run a successful flipping business down here.
Now, I don't know if you get this question very often, but I have people come up to me like, I don't know how you work with family. I could never work with my parents or my kids. Do you get that? Did you get that a lot?
No, actually, you know, my father, Jim, was, I feel really blessed, and I know this sounds kind of cheesy, but I mean it so sincerely. He was an incredible mentor and very, very empowering. So his approach was, I will give you the tools that you need, but this is going to be your business. San Diego is your territory, so you need to go out and create it. This is how I did it, and this is what worked for me. But, you know, fly free, little birdie. Go give it a shot down there. He was definitely my greatest cheerleader and supporter, and was always there when difficult situations arose as they did. But no, I could not have asked for a more loving, supportive mentor.
Well, hey, Aaron, I want to point out to the listeners as well that if they haven't heard of Jim Soward, then maybe it wasn't a household name, but he was what people would consider a guru. He had an acumen of real estate knowledge and tactics and abilities. I mean, he had his hands in notes and flips and rentals and lease options and everything you can really think of. And I remember back in 2010, I went to a Los Angeles area meetup group, you know, one of the RIAs there. I think it was Phyllis Rockwars group at the time. And Jim was sitting in the corner as, you know, one of the Ask a Pro type guys. You know, if you had a question about a deal, he was your deal maker. So that was the first taste I had got of Jim, and I knew kind of what I was dealing with at the time. And he's been instrumental in helping me get to where I'm at now, especially with Kimberly. And we just can't say enough about the guy. So, and to all you listening out there, he was one of those gurus.
Well, and it was one of the reasons that we wanted to ask you guys too, is for that. There's a little piece of Jim in this chapter as well, and that's definitely a piece of what we're always trying to do, is creating a legacy. And, you know, stuff that we touch, leave, you know, some of what we create ends up sticking around for decades, and not just the physical properties themselves, but what you pass on to generations. It's pretty special. So I just thrilled you guys to help us with this, and you actually gave me a really great segue into you, Derek. How did you end up getting started? Was this sort of something that you grew up with, family and real estate? And then how did you get attached to you and Kimberly working together?
So I definitely don't have the family lineage in terms of a family business. So, but although my dad has since gotten into real estate and was instrumental in me getting into the business, but backtracking a second, back in 2008 when I graduated college, my dad bought me a piece of land in Arkansas as opposed to the trip to Europe that I wanted. And granted, I was a 21-year-old kid. I had no idea what to do with a piece of land in Arkansas, but he had the vision. He knew that there was a plan. Basically, he kind of coached me through what to do with it. We cleared it and sold it to the developer, and I made a few bucks on it. And that just kind of got my wheels turning about the opportunity. And I didn't quite jump into the space. I just got out of college and didn't have money, so I needed a job. And I ended up getting one as a bartender. Did that for a couple years. And after I was able to get enough money doing that, I ended up buying a duplex in Barstow for $22,500. And that was in 2010 at the very bottom of the market. So they were almost giving them away. And it was, but I have to take one step further behind that because this is important. I went to a Tony Alvarez seminar about 6 months before I bought that duplex and took his class, got his book. And, you know, they have the boilerplate stuff in there. You know, you need to buy it 70% of ARV minus repair costs and all that. And I remember getting on the phone and calling REO agents and sounding like such a rookie. And I'll never forget it. This one agent, one of the first agents I called, he's like, I went through the spiel, through the script, and he's like, you sound like you just went to one of those seminars and you're just rattling off old numbers to buy properties for 70%, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I did. And, you know, I'm 21 years old and I'm trying to get into business. What do you want from me? And he actually, like, once he heard that, he's like, all right, well, you're doing the right things, and you know this will make sense. But, and he actually gave me a couple of pointers as to how to talk to the next agent. But fast forward a little bit, I bought a duplex, I put tenants in it, learned how to become a landlord briefly, and then sold the duplex to a regular at my bar. And I think I sold it for $56,000. So after putting a few grand into it, I made a nice chunk of change, especially if, you know, for being that age, and realized that real estate's the way to go. Shortly thereafter, I quit bartending and off to the races.
Now, just real quickly, before we move on past sort of like the college age, Kimberly, did you go to college and what did you study?
I did. I went to Loyola Marymount and I studied English.
Interesting. And then Derek, what did you...
You would never have known if I talked to him.
You what?
said you would never have known it by talking to her.
He's just being
adorable.
Being a rat.
All right, Derek. So besides rocking the bartending gig, what did you study in school?
I basically went to school for baseball, but I was a sociology major, and yeah, that was really it. I didn't have any real estate ambitions in college, but you know, looking back, there are a few of those traits I learned from the sociology major that kind of helped me where in real estate now. You know, it's the people and relationship business. So,
oh yeah.
Frankly, I just wanted my degree and get out of there as soon as I could.
Well, one of the reasons I like to ask is everybody's approaching this business. Shoot, I'm a retired actor from New York City. And they're like, you know, how did you get in the business? You know, we all get here in different ways. It's just bringing the skill set that you learn in. So, no, that's exactly what I was looking for. So baseball / sociology, that's interesting. And then it's perfect. So it sounds like, Derek, you started in sort of the fix and flip model. And then when did the two of you actually meet?
I got a call from Jim saying that a good friend of his had a son who was moving down to San Diego, and Jim thought it would be a fit that we meet and see if there was any synergy. I think that was in
So I moved to San Diego in 2012. So that happened. That meeting happened in 2011 because I hadn't moved down here yet. And so, Aaron, to explain the scenario, our fathers were friends. So I think my dad took one of Jim's lease option classes like 15 years ago, and then they became buddies. And my dad was getting into the real estate investing business. He was a lifelong cameraman, you know, in the motion picture industry, and didn't want to do that and retired. So he got into the investing business at Jim. And then, as Kimberly just alluded to, they connected us when Jim found out I was moving to San Diego.
Okay.
And I was moving to San Diego from Florida at the time, where I was buying properties at tax deed auctions, so and renovating them. So I was kind of in the same in line there. And so I think naturally it made sense.
Okay. So you meet, and obviously, what did you guys both bring to the table? You're like, this will work.
We had there was a definite synergy. We connected. We got along well. We're speaking the same language. We had the same desires to be successful in this space. And Derek, I think first started, he brought Danoka. This is an interesting story. So up until that point, we were doing median priced homes. We hadn't stepped into the higher price point. And Derek, especially Los Angeles, I mean, that was primarily our bread and butter. Derek brought Danoka our first true high-end flip.
Yep, I was an agent, Aaron, so I had my license and joined the brokerage here in San Diego. So that may be a missing link. So where I was actively in the field finding properties, and so that's how the relationship started in San Diego. I was an agent on behalf of Danoka.
Oh, man, you went to the dark side. What? I get that question a lot too. People wonder, I wish in my investing career I would have gotten my sales license a lot earlier in the game, if nothing else, just to understand a lot more of the legalities in the state of California. Mm-hmm. I feel like I would have just picked it up a little bit faster. You don't end up having to take the test, but sorry, sidebar. So you went to the dark side, got your real estate license. So you brought the first, and what did this deal look like, and what year was that?
2012.
Okay.
I remember the rehab on this project came in at $220,000, and Jim, like, literally turned sheet white. It was well out of the model that we've been operating.
It was about a little over a 3,000 square foot house within a affluent section of northeast San Diego County called Poway, in a gated community. And the house was $800,000 purchase price and a resale value of $1,250,000. And at the time, like, that really wasn't Danoka's model. But when I walked through the house the first time, I just felt like there was a deal there.
And there was.
Wow. Well, Man, your guys' stuff is pretty dang beautiful. Some of the projects that you've created, I just, man, it's got such a great design eye to it. Who does what in the partnership?
That's Kimberly's role.
Primarily, yeah. I mean, I dump ideas off of Derek, and we do collaborate, but for the most part, Derek sources the deals. Occasionally, I'll bring one to the table, but my role is running the crews, project managing, making sure that the design is dialed in and appeals to the majority.
She's a really great designer. And yeah, absolutely. And I'm so bad at it, Aaron. I'm colorblind. I don't have an eye for design. I think when we were looking at a property, she bounced ideas off me more from like the practical side. Like, you know, what's the buyer going to be looking for in terms of usability and functionality rather than necessarily
aesthetic,
color schemes and things like that.
That's true. He definitely, he's like, you know, it's a tutu and it's missing this and we need that. And he really does the research and says, you know, for us to get the number we're looking for, this is what this house needs to have when we go to market. And then I go to work and creating that.
That's a very different skill set for somebody who just sort of rocked the English degree. So how did you fall into the design side?
Pardon me?
Like, I mean, especially if you get handed a big, you know, $200,000 rehab, did your design eye just magically appear and everyone's like, oh, okay. Because if you're doing median price, you're not doing that kind of rehab that I've seen.
No, I think truthfully, as I said, through osmosis. I mean, I spent my childhood on job sites, and I think I inherited that skill set from my mom. She was incredible at transforming properties, and that piece always spoke to me. And I saw it so much. We'd get picked up from school and stay on job sites until dinner time. It was just how I grew up. So I absorbed a lot of that, and I've just always had a passion for it. I love it.
All right.
I think, Aaron, an important point, I think, for the viewers who maybe necessarily haven't flipped a bunch of houses, you know, a $200,000 renovation budget on a 3,000-square-foot, single-story ranch house gets eaten up quickly. I mean, you know, a tile roof could be $40,000 to $50,000. All that flooring could be another $30,000 if you're going engineered. And so you know what I mean? Like, so just the sheer volume of material, and it just eats up some of those budgets. So,
and we did an addition there, right? But we added the bedroom, so there was some internal structural
fit. That's a bigger issue.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, and that's definitely what we're going to try to accomplish on this show too. Let's get into that, is like how this changes, because you basically have gone through an entire cycle. So 2012, when you started getting into this, you know, you're well into two, like the quadrant two, the downturn happened. It doesn't seem like it would be a great time to do the high end stuff. And then now we're sort of at the tail end of quadrant four, where, you know, we're warning people, you know what, maybe now's not a fantastic time to do that $12 million rehab at the moment. It's time to wind down those kind of projects. So let's talk about the journey. So you started to do these sort of high-end stuff in 2012. What was the market like?
So the market was actually pretty strong. San Diego County had some really strong numbers, and it wasn't quite where it hit, obviously, in this last like 24 months or so. But, you know, that was part of what I brought to the table, was through all the research and the numbers and the volume and the metrics, and we felt pretty confident in it. And there was a lot of buyers, especially in the Poway area. So Poway has really good schools, and frankly, the best in San Diego other than areas in the La Jolla area. And so there's always buyers for family style homes out there. So felt good about that. But you look back, like you mentioned before, that same property right now would not make sense. And maybe it would. Everything has a price, right? I mean, for the right price, it would. But it's definitely a different feeling and out there today than it was possibly back then. And you have to be really careful right now with what you get, you know, you actually decide to do.
Yeah, we're not looking at projects right now anywhere near what that first deal that we did together.
Okay.
That's
a good idea. And I'm getting a lot of that feedback from a lot of the former investors that I knew that was doing some high-end stuff, especially stuff that they know is going to take a lot of time along the coast, that's going to trigger some kind of environmental review. Or to be honest with you, especially after the accessory dwelling unit regulations came out, that seems to sort of be the hot topic. But I'm hearing, particularly in San Diego, that they're very backed up, and that a lot of timelines investors aren't expecting the timelines that they are now that are landing in their lap, especially for these kind of projects.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's serious, and you have to budget for it. And if you have a very large monthly debt service payment, then you're going to be in some trouble. And, you know, I was listening to a podcast this morning, and it was talking about the difference between debt and equity. And maybe, you know, if you had the right investors and they were equity partners and you weren't in front of the spray train of debt payments every month, you might be able to, and the numbers made sense, you might be able to find something that works for you. But most people are getting hard money and or private, and typically have to get in front of that spray train, and it's scary. So
it's funny you mentioned that. In 2013, I remember there was that little, I think it was 2013, there was a little softness in the market, and it just, I think it happened over the summer. And I ran into a guy in Orange County who, I think he had 5 or 6 multi-million dollar rehabs going on at the same time. And I, you know, as a hard money lender, I'm calculating in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, you've got over $100,000 in hard money payments every month. And so when you're when you're in a market like now, I it's a little scary to know that people are going to be going into those situations, and they're not thinking that the market can soften a little bit. It's a little scary. So you guys have, so in 2012, the market had really sort of done its crash and gone up a little bit. So that was a good time. You were chasing the right inventory in the right neighborhoods. And now, are you still operating in those same neighborhoods? You've just decided to throttle it back and go to easier, more median income flips?
Correct. Yeah, we've not abandoned. We've just shifted gears a little bit.
Okay.
And we are focusing more on the median price properties, not doing a lot of value engineering, square footage and plans and permits, and they're quicker deals for the most part, and more entry level type properties.
Yeah, and they have more than one exit strategy. Maybe you don't, ideally you don't want to rent something out. Maybe it still wouldn't pencil as a good rental, but you at least have that option if you had to do it. But if you have a $3 million house in La Jolla, you know, good luck renting that out and even treading water. I mean, so I think that's important for people to look at moving forward. If you did get caught with something, how long can you hang on to it for? And what can you do with it? And, you know, I know a lot of guys in San Diego right now who are a little nervous about their large portfolios. Matter of fact, just last week, Aaron, when I saw you down at the SDCIA meeting, mm-hmm. and Bruce was talking, you know, a couple of guys I know who have very large portfolios here in San Diego got on the mic and asked Bruce, because they were a little freaked out about what they do in this situation. So, you know, I think right now, in talking to a lot of the other investors in San Diego, and specifically the guys on the acquisition side, what we're seeing is people factoring longer hold times and lower resale value on their initial underwriting. And as long as you build in a proper margin of safety, I think you can be all right. So, and the reason I say that is I went back and looked at all the sales numbers in San Diego in 2009 to 2010. And just to see like how many homes were selling in that time, right? The absolute bottom of the market after the crash. And there's still thousands and thousands of homes here in San Diego that sell. Granted, when back then you had all that price damage due to all the foreclosures, that I think will be a little different this time around. But my point is that homes still sell if you're in the right price points and in the right neighborhood mm-hmm. that are desirable. Homes will still be moving. So as long as you underwrite your deals properly, you still have product.
We've got a few speaking engagements in January. You'll catch us on January 9th in Glendale, California, as we speak at the 2009 Los Angeles Real Estate Summit. We are doing that in conjunction with Robert Hall and Associates. Bruce will be doing his 10 decisions to make before the next downturn. January 17th, we'll be doing that same talk in Costa Mesa with OC RIA. And then, of course, January 26th, California Real Estate on Borrowed Time. This is Bruce's prediction for the next few years on what he expects to happen in the California market. Sometimes it's not about the ultimate destination, but the journey and the trajectory along the way. Find out more about that at thenorrisgroup.com/TikTok, or you can check out our entire calendar on thenorrisgroup.com, and it's all under training.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.